Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Bank Robbery and Forced Accompaniment Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 2, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Whitfield v. United States. This case concerns 18 U.S.C. Section 2113E, which provides a minimum sentence of 10 years and a maximum sentence of life imprisonment for a bank robber who forces another person to accompany him during the robbery or while fleeing the scene. The question in this case is whether the requirement that the robber force another person to accompany him requires proof of more than a minimal movement of the victim. To discuss the case, we have Professor John Stiniford, who is Associate Professor of Law and Assistant Director of the Criminal Justice Center at the University of Florida Levin College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Stiniford.
Title 18, United States Code Section 2113, is often called the Federal Bank Robbery Statute. But it actually covers four distinct crimes. Bank robbery, that is taking money from a bank by force or threat of force. Felony bank theft, taking more than $1,000 without a threat of force. Misdemeanor bank theft, taking $1,000 or less without a threat of force. And receipt of money stolen from a bank. The penalty for misdemeanor bank theft is 0 to 1 year. The penalty for felony bank theft is 0 to 10 years. The penalty for bank robbery is 0 to 20 years, and the penalty for receipt of stolen property depends on whether the person who got the money that they transferred to you did so through robbery or misdemeanor theft or felony theft. Your penalty will basically match that of the actual person who took the money from the bank. Now, this statute also contains a penalty enhancement provision, Section E, that says, quote, whoever, in committing any offense defined in this section, or in avoiding or attempting to avoid apprehension for the commission of such offense, or in freeing himself or attempting to free himself from arrest or confinement for such offense, kills any person, or forces any person to accompany him without the consent of such person, shall be imprisoned not less than 10 years, or if death results, shall be punished by death or life imprisonment. Close quote. The question that arises in Whitfield versus United States, a case that was argued before the Supreme Court in December of 2014, is what it means to force someone to accompany you during a bank robbery, bank theft, or receipt of stolen money from a bank. This is an important question because the statute imposes very harsh mandatory minimum sentences. 10 years in a run-of-the-mill case, and the death penalty or life imprisonment in a case where someone dies. In other words, this provision has the capacity to transform a misdemeanor theft crime into a capital offense. In 2008, Larry Whitfield and Quantarius McCoy attempted to rob a credit union. As they entered the building, a metal detector went off and triggered an automatic lock on the inner doors to the building. Whitfield and McCoy fled in a car, crashed it, and ran off on foot. Whitfield ran into the woods, where he abandoned his gun. He then entered the home of Mary Parnell, a 79-year-old woman with a history of heart disease and high blood pressure. He informed her that he was unarmed and didn't intend to hurt her. Whitfield then asked Parnell to move with him from the hallway into the home's computer room so that the police wouldn't see him. The total distance was between 4 and 9 feet. Whitfield then telephoned a friend for a ride. While Whitfield was on the phone, Parnell started having trouble breathing. She suffered a heart attack and died. Whitfield ran from the house and hid in the woods, where police eventually found him. Whitfield argues that Section E, that is Title 18 United States Code, Section 2113E, was not meant to cover conduct like his. It was enacted shortly after notorious bank robber John Dillinger had committed a series of bank robberies using human shields as a means of escape. Whitfield argued that it was not meant to cover conduct like his, that involved only movement of a few feet within a single building. Whitfield's main evidence for this was the extremely harsh minimum penalty associated with this crime. If a company is interpreted to cover conduct like his, then defendants of roughly equal culpability could be subjected to wildly divergent sentences. For example, a bank robber who orders a teller to go into a bank vault will get no enhancement under Section E, whereas a robber who orders the teller to accompany him into the vault will get at least an extra 10 years. Similarly, a defendant who breaks into a victim's home to hide from the police will get no Section E enhancement, even if the victim dies of fright. But a defendant like Whitfield, who breaks into the home and tells the homeowner to walk a few feet into another room with him, gets at least 10 extra years and possibly life. Thus, Whitfield argued that the statute should be interpreted to cover only those defendants who force a person to accompany them for a substantial distance. And that's his standard, by the way. You should put that in quotes, quote, substantial distance. In response, the government argued that the statute, Section 2113E, merely uses the word accompany and does not contain any substantial distance requirement. The word accompany is commonly used to cover travel over both short and long distances. Moreover, it is not clear that Congress only wanted to cover those who travel a substantial distance, as some of the most culpable instances of forced accompaniment, such as the use of human shields, do not necessarily involve travel over any kind of substantial distance. Finally, the government criticized the substantial distance standard as vague and unworkable. At Supreme Court oral argument, the justices appeared skeptical of Whitfield's textual and policy arguments. They did not appear convinced that his proposed interpretation of Section 2113E was either correct or workable. On the other hand, several justices appear concerned about the possibility that this provision could be used as a hammer to force defendants in relatively minor cases to plead guilty in order to avoid a very harsh mandatory sentence. Remember, as I said earlier, Section 2113E covers all sorts of taking of property from a bank, including misdemeanor bank theft. So under the right set of facts, prosecutors could use Section E to threaten to charge a misdemeanor defendant with a felony that would include a mandatory minimum 10-year sentence and use this as a way of depriving that defendant of the right to trial. In recent cases such as Bond versus United States and Yates versus United States, the justices of the Supreme Court have shown increased concern about the risk that prosecutors will use draconian interpretations of federal criminal statutes to abuse the plea negotiation process, threatening unjustly heavy punishments on those accused of crime. It is not clear that the court will act to limit prosecutorial discretion in this case, but Whitfield highlights a far broader and deeper problem. Over the past century, and especially over the past 40 years, the Supreme Court has almost tripped over itself to clear the way for prosecutorial abuse of the plea bargaining process. It has emptied of meaning traditional doctrines meant to limit the harshness of the criminal law, such as the Cruel and Unusual Punishments Clause's prohibition of disproportionate punishments, and the quasi-constitutional rule of strict construction of penal statutes. At the same time, it has approved of plea bargaining, which was traditionally a suspect activity because of the risk that it would deprive defendants of their right to a fair trial, and in fact has praised plea bargaining as an essential means of greasing the wheels of criminal justice. Today, there is often almost no limit to the punishments that can be threatened by creative prosecutors, and there is often very little judges can do to stop them. The problem is far deeper than the issues under consideration in Whitfield itself, but it is at least nice to see the Supreme Court starting to show signs of caring.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.